Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the relationships making the headlines in politics today and exploring the psychology and personalities in current affairs. For the first time in 70 years, a new monarch is about to be crowned in London. We have lived through an Elizabethan age and are about to turn maybe a new page. To help me explore what this might mean for the nation, King Charles's subjects, and perhaps for international relations more globally, I am thrilled to welcome to my couch Dr. Tessa Dunlop, historian and author of Elizabeth and Philip, which is newly out in paperback. Hello, Tessa.
Hello, good afternoon, Lucy.
Amazing to have you chatting to me today, because I know you're going to be so busy, but it's really captured the imagination, because this is something that hasn't really happened for 70 years. But could you give me a little bit of background first? The Queen dies last September. Why has there been this gap of time between then and the ceremony? Because he became King automatically.
Yes, the accession is very different from the coronation. In fact, I would suggest that a longer period of time would have been advantageous between the ascension and the coronation. Historically, that wouldn't have been, it would have been in keeping, to be honest. Churchill left at 18 months. There were several reasons. Famously, of course, we keep on hearing, to keep the bailiffs out of the house because we weren't in the best shape economically in the early 1950s. Well, nor are we today. Likewise, in the wake of Queen Victoria, for example, such was the extent of the mourning for her, it was seen to be appropriate to wait a good year until Edward VII was coronated. Of course, he then got sick and he had to have this operation. He had this sort of abscess in his distended gut. He was a big eater and he was not a young man, very much like Charles. He was 59, Charles is 74, but if you factor in the socioeconomic, not economic, but the social differences that have taken place in the last 100 years or so, you could argue they were an equivalent age. Certainly, Charles is in better health than Edward. It was seen as necessary to wait. And I think for both reasons, we could have waited. There was such an outpouring of grief and emotion for the passing of the Queen. It wouldn't have done any harm to wait a bit longer. I think we're all sort of stunned and a little bit fatigued, actually, by ceremonial, and perhaps not quite ready in the way that we might have been for this gearing up towards the coronation. And secondly, of course, the cost of living crisis makes the event a bit jaundiced for some. It's tough when you're trying to count your pennies to comprehend the lavishness of what's going to happen on Saturday.
Yes, you're absolutely right. We'd had the Platinum Jubilee, and then fast on the heels of that came the funeral and people queuing around the Thames to go and pay their respects. And then suddenly, less than 9 months later, we're gearing up for something else. And do you think psychologically that might be because we're just living in a faster paced environment now? It's, 24/7 news cycle, social media, people expect things to happen in the next 5 minutes.
No, I think the idea of rushing it out, which is effectively what it's been, really, because they could have had it this year and a bit later, was that it was going to be slimmed down, low key, a sort of get it out of the way mentality. Also bearing in mind the king's great age. He's on track to become our oldest ever king very shortly. The wolf's in the chicken run from your 60s onwards, let's be honest, Lucy.
I'm sure 50 is the new 21.
Well, we like to think it is, but we're all mortal, even kings. So I think there were a couple of reasons there. But one was this idea of low-key, bundle it out, and also let's get the king going, because it's not going to be a long reign like his mother's. But I think, and you mentioned there that we had the Platinum Jubilee and we had the funeral, but we also had a Golden Jubilee and a Diamond Jubilee in the last 20 years. That's a lot of royal pomp and ceremony. If you think, once you have a coronation, you then have to wait 25 years for the silver and then 25 for the gold. And then there's this glut because the Queen lived for such a long time. So we've had an abnormal, excessive amount of pomp, while perversely, Britishness, our economy, our overseas brand has slipped. And I think there is a slight discord there that is proving uncomfortable, even for some monarchists. that this kind of, oh, we're so good at ceremony. Yeah, and so what? And it's not Charles's fault in any way at all, but we have to own Philip and Elizabeth and their longevity and their ability to tie us back to the Blitz, to Churchill, to all that felt nostalgic about our sense of self, masked our slippage on the global stage. And it's something that we've had to face increasingly in the wake of Brexit. And perhaps the coronation, again, is slightly off key. Maybe if we left it 6 months a year, inflation's down a bit, people are feeling a bit more tail up, this would have had more of a frisson to it. As it was, I was down there last night at Canada Gate talking to an Australian presenter, and he was going, "It's a bit flat." And of course, the last time he was here was for the funeral. And I said, "It is a bit flat." And also, let's not pretend, Lucy, in the way that Elizabeth was unimpeachable, was hopeful, was feminine, was new, Charles is the everyman king. We see our ordinary self in him, ditto Camilla. And that's a different prospect as monarch.
It has a very different psychological feel to it, doesn't it? Because the monarchy, obviously the monarchy plays a crucial constitutional role for the nation. But it also seems to me there is this, as you say, this incredible psychological dimension. And if his role is less of the majesty and more of the everyman, you know, the love match, the love relationship that endure, whatever narrative they choose to weave around it, what do you think this new monarchy is meant to mean for the country? What are they hoping it's going to mean? Is it this everyman dimension to it? Or are they hoping for it to be bigger and grander? And as you say, to reclaim some of that pomp that the shine that appears to have come off the national brand?
Well, it is one of the biggest ceremonial events that we've seen. It's certainly not as big as the Queen's. You wouldn't expect it to be in 1953. The procession is something like a quarter of the length, etc. And of course, it's reflecting our position on the world stage. There isn't the turnout in the same way. There isn't the numbers of Commonwealth troops. There will be some, but we can't pretend we are where we were 70 years ago, the British brand. As for what we hope with Charles, I think it's a slight feeling. I think anyway, we've got quite a tired Tory government who's been in power for a very long time. And I think that, remember that the institution of state monarchy is guided by a combination of forces, establishment forces, not just the Church of England and the Archbishop, but also, of course, the government, His Majesty's government. And I think that they perhaps lack vision. Rishi Sunak's very inexperienced. So I don't believe that they probably have a vision. Churchill had a vision, send off the new queen to be the personification of this new Commonwealth. And off she went for 6 months. But there isn't the equivalent for Charles. It's very much got the feel of, it's a bit make do and mend, which is kind of in keeping with this recycle evergreen persona. Like get him coronated and let's hope it stays afloat. And I don't think...
Is there any gossip to be had out of the fact that the coronation is happening 2 days after the local elections, which seems either the number 10 and the palace diaries just didn't coordinate, or has that actually been delivered? Is this all part of, you're saying, you know, let's usher it out when in fact other people might be thinking about other things like local election results?
I don't think it's going to be a great day, is it, for the Conservatives on Thursday? So you're right, there might be a bit of masking the inevitable, some royal sticking plaster across the wound in 2 days' time. Doesn't matter if Rishi's just had a bleeding nose because he's going to be carrying a flag and reading a poem or a verse out of the Bible. I can't remember what his specific role is off the top of my head, but he's up there in the procession. So no matter... The bruising implications of Thursday, as predicted in the polls, he will once more be elevated to his position as first among equals, the Prime Minister. So there might be something in that timing. Others would say if they took the Harry and Meghan soap opera more seriously than they should, oh, look, it's because of Archie's birthday and it meant that Duchess would stay away. I mean, I think there are lots of reasons. It's the time of year suits well. I would also argue, though, that it's just one bank holiday too many. Yeah, we're almost sort of wading in time off. Nothing's really working. Our children are lethargic and without and rudderless.
Yeah.
Our hospitals have queues coming out.
We've also had so much time off. You know, lockdown, nothing else, lockdown showed us that we really miss hanging out with people, and that actually if you're not in the workplace or you're not able to travel because you know, the everything is on a bank holiday timetable, then actually your world shrinks a bit and it feels a bit relentless.
Yeah, it does feel a bit relentless. The other thing is, and I worry about this now, I've sort of, having written the Elizabeth and Philip book and done this PhD on royal imaging and national image, I suddenly sort of found myself sucked into the vortex of royal journalism and commentariat. And it's a sort of self-selecting world where most of the people commenting on the monarchy and on that rota are supporters of monarchy. And if they weren't before, they are once they're in situ, because it's putting butter on their bread. And I think sometimes they're in danger of talking to themselves a little bit. Like, if you look at the polling around the coronation, people are pretty apathetic about the coronation. 64% don't really care, or really actively don't care, feel kind of grumpy about it. Where if you look in 1953, London ran out of bread because so many people were making paste sandwiches. It's not comparable where we were then and where we are now.
Gosh, that takes me back. Fish paste sandwiches. Thank goodness we have moved on. I really hope that the coronation buffet won't include fish paste sandwiches. But there do seem to be other elements
moved
that
on
have
in
been,
that respect.
Other elements have been updated, I would say, not least the fish paste sandwiches. Do you think... You're talking about this polling where people seem rather apathetic. Do you think they will notice at all that, for example, elements of the ceremony have been tweaked, apparently, I gather, to make it feel a little bit more 2023 rather than 1953? Is all this being done for our benefit, but we're not really going to take any notice?
It's also sort of global staging of Britain, isn't it? But again, timing, we've just had the global staging of Britain with one of the world's most famous women, our queen, as Macron said, the queen. And I wonder if we needed this glut, if we need this as well, this because arguably we need to sort ourselves out politically, but everyone knows already that we do a pretty good job of looking after our monarchy and wrapping tinsel and glitter around our brand. Yeah, there has been changes, significant changes. What you try and achieve with a coronation is a snapshot of the nation. It's got to be about continuity, but also take in contemporary influences. It's a really hard gig to pull off and do well. So you've got in that regalia procession, rather than just being all white, powerful, aristocratic, predominantly political or military men, you now have almost gender equality, 7-5. You have the likes of the Duke of Buccleuch alongside Baroness Floella Benjamin. You also have, therefore, women of colour, and you very significantly have different religions playing a role, as you would expect in Britain. It would be really weird if you didn't. I mean, that would be totally tin eared. I would say it hasn't gone far enough. I think that all the composers who have been invited are British. What about the Commonwealth? What about his other 14 realms? Do they not create new music? Can they not have a role? I would suggest that the honorary page boys shouldn't all be white, aristocratic and English, which they are. I know Camilla wanted her grandsons. Okay, we need to have George, Prince George. But how about someone from the Prince's Trust? How about, you know, I don't know, an Aborigine from Australia? People would say tokenism. Yeah. And are you telling me that the way in which the procession hasn't been chosen isn't about trying to make sure something represents a more diverse country and a more diverse global network that links Charles? And I think we failed in those specific examples I've given.
And when you said then that part of the problem might be that the commentariat are really just speaking in a bubble about themselves to themselves, and you've described a situation where perhaps some of this is a bit tin-eared and they haven't thought laterally enough to work out how to actually make something look a bit more relevant or actually feel, sound a lot more diverse. Why have they not done, you're identifying a major flaw here. Why have they not really thought that through, given that he was in the position of waiting to be king for decades, could have had ample time to think about what the 6th of May actually looks and sounds and feels like?
Several reasons. And I addressed this in my book. We had a queen for 70 years. And on the one hand, that was a massive boon. That was continuity. That was an incredible figurehead. It was amazing soft power. But it meant that if it ain't broke, don't fix it mentality crept in behind the palace walls. So an already traditional institution doesn't ever recognize the need to change because the queen has this extraordinary cachet and popularity, particularly towards the end of her life in the noughties and in the last decade. Prince Philip, when he comes in, says, oh my God, you know, this is terrible. This needs to be modernized. He's at, you know, a sort of pushing for change as the Queen's husband. He's very unpopular, even with Churchill, particularly, in fact, with Churchill and with many of the suits. I don't think Harry, who, of course, has done it in a clumsy way and sometimes too personal, but I don't think he's, you know, off the track when he criticizes the suits. And he talks about this unbending institution. There's something there. They don't want to hear it. There's a complacency almost. And if you look at the types of people in the household, and yes, desperately short of diversity, Buckpal, despite its own targets, still doesn't have even 10% of their employees who are from ethnic minorities. How can that be in the centre of London? So without a doubt, the households need updating. You can't update your king. That's hereditary monarchy. He is a posh white man of 74, well-intentioned. We know where he's at, and he can't help his identity. But he can rearrange the players around him. But of course, one of the problems of monarchy is that unlike the Queen's father and grandfather, smoking has gone out of fashion, and we are destined to have very old monarchs. Now, if they're this, if we're always going to have a CEO who's really old at the top of our most famous institution of state, where does change come from? Who drives that change in what is already a very traditional, fairly unbending institution?
So interestingly enough, you could almost see the coronation then as a bit like a wedding day. That's the snapshot of where we are right now, 6th of May, 2023. But there is a potential for how is the relationship between King Charles and the nation going to be going forward? And what often happens in relationships is that you have the wedding and then rather effortlessly, people fade out of your life and a new chapter of your life begins. This is going to be a new chapter for King Charles's life. How could this country use him globally going forward, if this reign is to, because he's always been thought of as ahead of his time, especially on things like the environment, climate change.
He's been muzzled there. We've seen he's already muzzled, Lucy. He couldn't go to COP27.
Couldn't go to COP, yeah.
And globally, I don't think globally the optics will be great, because I think Australia will have another referendum at some point. And I don't think it'll go the way of the monarchy this time. I was speaking to the Sky team last night, the Australian Sky team. I think Jamaica is next up for re-examining its relationship and becoming a republic. So that's not Charles's fault, but the glue that was the Queen, who was more popular than monarchy,
all of our affection for the monarchy was wrapped up in our affection for her as an individual.
Yeah. And if you look, there was a poll out today in the Daily Mail, and it says, oh, hurrah, you know, we don't want to get rid of the monarchy. No, but if you look, the majority, in fact, of monarchists even agree we need more transparency in the institution. Their ridiculous wealth is one of the big issues. You know, they avoid inheritance tax. They live in La La Land. That's obscene. It needs addressed. I don't think that it's acceptable. And I think most people, when they drill into it, it's no good Piers Morgan telling me, oh, but they never ask for handouts. They, you know, they look after themselves. Yes, because they're not living in a reality. It all goes through the line of succession, which again breeds bad blood in the family. If all the wealth avoids inheritance tax only when it goes Queen, King, William, then your spares, Andrew, Harry, are going to throw their toys out of the pram. So we need to look at some of these things. And we don't, because we rely on monarchy to provide us with continuity because it's always been there, because it's reassuring, because it's the glue that binds us. But actually, with a Scotland and a Wales and a Northern Ireland pulling in different directions, is it going to be the glue that binds us? That, again, is something that Charles needs to look at. His polling in Northern Ireland is sub 50%. Questions, Lucy, questions. I mean, I'm all for admiring the frocks on Coronation Day, and I'm all for getting excited about the anointing taking us back to the Old Testament and King Solomon. And I'm all for the magic and trickery of invented tradition, but I think we have to own that monarchy isn't what it once was, and we need to ask ourselves, what do we want of it?
It reminds me that one of the highlights that we have to look forward to, apparently, is Tom Cruise in tandem with Winnie the Pooh, presumably as a sort of a reinvention of the Queen Elizabeth Paddington sketch of last year's Jubilee, that actually there's something so incongruous about that pairing and so contrived that I can't help feel that, as you say, there will be more questions to be asked after the coronation than before it.
Yeah. And Tom Cruise, kind of an odd choice. It's not exactly without controversy, is he? I'm sure I could have found somebody more bland and suitable. But of course, Ed Sheeran wasn't available for the concert on the big Sunday.
On but which note,
why not?
Tessa Dunlop, Dr. Tessa Dunlop, not only a brilliant historian, completely across all the material and the gossip, but also author of Elizabeth and Philip, which has just come out in the last week, newly in paperback. Thank you very much for being my guest on the couch.
Thank you, Lucy. I think I need a session on your couch next.
Certainly, you can stand in line behind King Charles.